We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, a weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your network and community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey, everybody. Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Stacy Brown Randell. Stacy has one focus in life, to help others avoid business failure. She knows she's been there, done that, and has a t-shirt. What Stacy learned when her first business failed, and through years of researching successful businesses, is now what is making all the difference with her current business's success. And she's sharing all of her secrets. Stacy's online programs and live coaching provide a blueprint to follow to take control of your referrals, your client experience, and your business. Stacy is a contrarian when it comes to typical referral advice and believes the best way to unleash a referral explosion is to do it without asking for referrals. And she has the results to prove it. Stacy is a three-time entrepreneur, certified productivity and time efficiency coach, has a background in sales and marketing, and is an aspiring author. Stacy received her master's in organizational communication and is married with three children. Stacy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm sure you're going to have lots of good tidbits, and I'm really, really interested in learning about your kind of different or unique approach here to the referrals and the atypical approach you've got. So good to be a good conversation today.
Yes, I definitely think so as well.
To get started, I'm going to ask, what is your most important business credential? It sounds like you've got, with three different, entrepreneurial initiatives, you've got kind of a diverse background, I'd imagine.
I do. And, I always kind of explain myself as having a portfolio career. And so when you look back on the things that I've done, they didn't always look like while I was going through it, leading together, lead me to where I am here today. So I'm very blessed and fortunate. And I don't think I always thought it at the time to go through the different portfolio work experience that I have. But to be honest, for the work that I do now, when it comes to helping business owners be able to run companies that will, make them money and not have them working 80 hours a week and be able to save them some time, and really helping them develop their business development strategies around referrals, that all came from a necessity for when I started my second, because my most important business credential was my first business that failed. And the lessons that I learned and my willingness to learn from that business failure, it was an HR consulting firm, and my willingness to learn from that failure and what went wrong, total business that I'm growing today and this business has been so much more successful than the first business. And everything comes from kind of lessons learned, the really hard, painful lessons learned from business failure, and really has informed and helped me propel my growth with the company that I have now. So that's definitely the best thing I went through, which is always the worst thing. Also, the worst thing I went through is that business failure.
I can only imagine, but as long as you're learning from those mistakes, right?
Absolutely. As long as you're willing to learn. I think some people aren't necessarily willing to learn, and that's a key piece to the puzzle.
So I'm curious, and maybe this is kind of one of those learning mistakes, but why the approach of not having to ask for the referral? Why do you believe that if you ask, you're doing it all wrong?
So this comes from all the research and information and advice that is out there in the marketplace today about how to generate referrals. About 80 to 90% of what you'll see out there is that if you want referrals, just ask. It's the advice that's been around for decades. And when I started my second business and I realized that I had not generated one client from a referral in my first business, and I was trying to figure out, okay, I have to touch business development every day. It was one of the hard lessons that I learned. I have to touch business development every going to do that. And I'm going to figure out what that looks like for me. I've got to find a tactic, right, that's going to work for me. And so it wasn't going to be cold calling. It wasn't going to be stalking on LinkedIn. It wasn't going to be networking every night of the week. And I figured out I want it to be referrals. So I went looking for advice on, okay, how to generate referrals. And everything I found said, well, just go ask. But to me, asking felt almost as bad as a cold call. It was almost like asking somebody who had never initiated that they wanted to help me. And here I was asking them to do something for me. And it just didn't sit right with me. And I thought, I can't be the only person this doesn't sit right with. So I started thinking about what was missing out there when you think about the advice on generating referrals and truly the philosophy of how and like the science behind why referrals work. And so from there, I kind of created my own opinions around referrals, and which that means nothing until I have results, right, to prove it. And so I was like, okay, out of necessity, I need my business development strategy to be referrals. I think this is a way to do it. I basically was using myself as a guinea pig. I was testing on myself, on my business, and I think success. And access, my client, started asking me, what are you doing to grow your business so fast? And I said, oh, I have this referral strategy that I follow. And they're like, okay, teach that to me. So then I started teaching it to them, and they started having success. And the fundamental piece I've always said is that what you do to generate referrals, there's a process that you follow. None of it's rocket science. But there's a process that you follow. And if you follow that process, there's no need to ask. And when you ask, you actually, you know, kind of in terms of thinking about the ability to generate referrals from that person once you ask them. And that all came to be because I did not want to ask for referrals, but I wanted them. So I just figured out another way to get them, had results, had success, had clients have results and success. And now that's a main focus of what I help people figure out how to do. And I don't think this information is out there. Most of the time when people go through the program or they work with me in like a VIP day, either live or virtually, or in a workshop, they're like, I've heard this stuff before, but never in this way. And that's what makes it make sense as to how you can generate referrals without asking.
That's really, really interesting. But obviously, if you're doing what you say you're going to do, you're generating the results and you're generating the success, there's going to be some discussion and excitement and enthusiasm around that. So that's quite fascinating. I like that. But still, once you, I don't know, I feel like asking isn't a bad thing, but you've built a process. And I'm really intrigued by that as well, because it really does come down to being consistent in your actions. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So let me go back to something you just said, because you're right. There are some people who are willing to ask, and it doesn't feel awkward to them. And that's totally fine. And I tell folks, there are businesses that are built on asking for referrals, and it works. Just like there's businesses that are built on a complete and total SEO lead generation strategy, and they'll never need referrals. Like, we could build and sustain our businesses in a lot of different ways. The type of clients that I usually work with, you know, it's that relationship building that they have to do that makes them uniquely positioned to generate referrals. And I always tell folks, think about a time someone asked you for a referral, right? The person who asked you for a referral, or even asked you to introduce you to somebody, not really to refer you, but just introduce you, or just ask you for help. You know, if you didn't, or if who they were asking you to introduce them to made you uncomfortable, right, you kind of shut down on that person. And that kind of keeps any future help that you'll provide to that person, because they put you in this awkward position, right? I call it the, when you ask somebody for a referral and you see them shift back in their chair, or they start, like, they lean back in their chair, they start shifting uncomfortably, that is literally their physical reaction to what you just asked them, which is to do work for you. I mean, that's literally what you're asking them. And not everybody's comfortable with that. And so this is just a way to avoid that, right? It's to avoid having to ask people directly. And that doesn't mean there's not work involved. And that doesn't mean language and messaging is important. Those are all the pieces. But that doesn't mean you, I mean, I tell folks all the time, if you're comfortable asking, so be it. I'm probably not the right person for you to be following in terms of what I teach. But this is for those folks that just, hey, I don't want to ask somebody to send me a referral. I want them to want to do it. How do I generate that to happen and for it to be consistent and sustainable and not sporadic? And that's where the system comes into place.
No, it totally makes sense. I really, really like that messaging that you're sharing right now. And I've been put in that position where it's kind of awkward. It's not that either the person that, requested, there was this level of, I don't know if you're the right fit for this person, or, there could be a lot of awkward situations. So, quite intriguing information that you're sharing here. I see that you're defining referrals in a different approach here as far as use this acronym H2H. So why don't we talk about that a little bit? What is H2H sales, and why are people in H2H sales best served by referrals?
So H2H sales is human to human. And for me, I have people who ask me the question all the time. I'm in B2B sales. Will your system work for me? I'm in business, or I'm in B2C, business to consumer sales. Will your system work for me? Will your process work for me? And I was like, it doesn't matter. If you're in what I call H2H sales, or what is referred to sometimes as high touch types of sales, then you are uniquely positioned to leverage referrals. You just probably need to know what to do. And when I talk about human to human, I'm talking about somebody has to know you, like you, and trust you before they're going to decide to do business with you. And the best example I can give is something that's high touch is like a financial advisor or a real estate agent, right? A realtor, or it could be a CPA or an attorney, somebody that you have to decide, yes, I think you are the best person to manage my money. I do think you are the best person to do my taxes or to get me out of legal trouble. Or, I do think you are the best person to help me find the biggest investment I'm going to make, which is the purchase of my home, or a business coach or a life coach, or it could even be a home builder, right? Yes, I got to trust you that you will build this home and you will not cheat me through the process. Like, people who are in those types of positions to where their clients get to know them and they have to trust them to decide to do business with them, that's high touch. They're just uniquely leveraged for referrals, because referrals only come from relationships, and they already have to build relationships in what they're doing with their clients before their client will become a client. And so that's why they're just uniquely positioned. That doesn't mean other people don't, have the benefit of using referrals. But the idea is that if you already have to build a relationship with your clients, then if you're not getting referrals, or you're only getting some sporadic every once in a while referrals, that's when we have a problem, because you're already there. You're just not doing all the right things to make business development easier for you. And so it's the difference between high touch, like the industry that I just talked about, versus highly wired. I don't need to talk to anyone to go buy a book, or I don't need to talk to anybody at Zappos to go buy a pair of shoes. I need to do it because they're high. It's just different from a business that's more high touch and that already has that relationship building piece in it.
Wow. Some really profound statements there. And I love the usage of the know you, like you, trust you. I think that's a great philosophy just in any relationship building practice. You've got to earn the trust to be able to earn the business, really, at the end of the day. And you also said, referrals only come from relationships, and there's so much truth to that. So it all makes sense. I really enjoyed hearing your H2H philosophy and how it doesn't matter if it's B2B or B2C. It's human to humans. That's fantastic. And that's really what this podcast is about, is building those relationships. So that being said, can you share with me your most successful or favorite networking story that you have?
My most successful or favorite. I get asked a lot by folks when they're trying to grow their businesses, where should I be spending my time? And networking is always a question that I think people ask about, like, where should I be networking? And I always tell folks, all of the best opportunities I have come across that have come across through networking, because they don't all, right? They're not all going to come across through networking, but the ones that I've had that come across best through networking are the ones where I have identified that my ideal client is in that networking room, or the people who know my ideal client are in that networking room. So I have a few groups that, when I'm doing local networking, that definitely kind of fulfill that need. And some of the best moments that I have had networking have come because I'm in the right space with like-minded people who are, definitely the type of people who could become my client, or they at least know people who could become my client. And I always find that those are the organizations in those networking opportunities that I want to give back to and I want to be a part of, which only strengthens the bond within that group, which only generates more business out of it. And that's not to say every networking event I go to, it's because I expect to get business from it. I mean, that would be crazy for anyone to think that, something your network, just people who know you, because whatever that may happen like down the road and how that may serve you. But some of my best moments when it comes to networking have truly been, I'm truly committed to the organization and I'm an active participant. And some of just the best opportunities, like I remember being at a networking event as this group that I'm a part of, and I had three different people come up to me and they're like, hey, so-and-so told me I needed to come talk to you about doing work with you. And those are those moments where you know you're truly in the right place and you've truly given enough to where people are giving back to you as well.
Yeah, I love that. Let's dive down the rabbit hole of being an active participant. What does that mean? Let's do a deeper dive into that.
Yeah, sure. So to me, the way I define it from an active participant is you have to set aside what I refer to as the spray and pray methodology, which is you go to a bunch of networking events, right? You go to a bunch of events, you go to a bunch of organizations, and you're just dropping in, and you're just praying something, like you're kind of spraying yourself everywhere, and you're just praying that something's going to hit. And that is such a waste of time. If you would just spend some time, like I tell my clients, I'm like, you guys could just spend some time, right? Just figuring out where's your ideal client and where are they hanging out, or where are the people hanging out that know your ideal client that you should get to know so they can introduce you or refer you to those ideal clients. Like, if you just figured out where you should be and then becoming active, you'll see much greater results. And when I say active, I mean attending the meetings, joining a committee, maybe joining the board, talking to different people, sitting at different tables, not always hanging out with the clique of people you now know, definitely speaking to those folks, but forcing yourself to meet somebody new each time you go to a lunch, looking for that new person who would just love for someone to speak to them, right? But truly like becoming an active participant, meaning show up and then also give back in some capacity, which very well could be joining a committee, joining a task force, joining the board.
Great, great insight right there. And I love your usage of the phrase spray and pray. I definitely reiterate that to a number of my clients as well. it's just a great visual of, I think, how a lot of people tackle networking and marketing and just new business in general. And at the end of the day, like you said, it's a waste of time. So you're actively involved in organizations, you're serving on committees, and your network, I imagine, is fairly extensive. What do you do to stay in front of or best nurture your network?
So, you know, it's interesting. My network is very extensive. I think that has a lot, and that's my local, you know, a portion of that's my local network, right? I kind of think about my networks in different ways, but my local network is very extensive. It's also because I've been in the same city for about 15, 16, 17 years. So, and I have worked in positions before I started my own businesses where I was naturally meeting people. I mean, I worked for Chamber of Commerce in our city for 5 years. I have an edge that some people don't naturally have when it comes to a huge. And so, you know, when I started my business, or even the first one, you know, the idea became of like, well, who do I need to be staying in front of? Because not everybody has to know what I do. And if everybody eventually figures out what I'm doing, that's great. But that can happen over time. I need to control what I can control, which is who in my network needs to know what I'm doing so they can actually, you know, refer me or introduce me to people who may need me in the future. And that's not everybody. That's not the thousands and thousands and thousands of people that I know. That is a core group of folks. Now, it could be a couple hundred. It may take me time to get through them, but I have a friend who calls this the 7 million cups of coffee. Like, it's just when you are trying to grow a brand, you know, people knowing who you are and what you do, you know, the best way to do that is to get out there and meet them for coffee. Or, and that's when they're starting out. I don't necessarily recommend people do that if they've been in business for a long time, unless they've never done it and there's only like 100 people who know them. Then we definitely need to expand our network. But, you know, from that perspective, it's just looking at who needs to know you and getting in front of them. And then staying in front of them is just more, well, I know a certain part of my network I'm going to see when I show up to a certain event. So making sure I'm there at that event. Doesn't mean I can always go, but trying to be consistent in my attendance at certain things. You know, sometimes it is for the key people that refer me business. That's, of course, part of my system. And so they're hearing from me continuously, not every month, but continuously throughout the year on purpose because they refer me business. But everybody else, it doesn't really fall into that bucket. you know, it's more so I know I'll see them at certain events, or I may just kind of like decide, hey, I haven't talked to this person in a really long time, I'll follow up with them. But because I'm so clear on where my business comes from, I don't spend a lot of time not doing or doing things that aren't very strategic. Everything is really thought out based on where my clients come from, of where I should spend my time. And I think that kind of helps me figure out, well, then how do I stay in touch and in front of people? Well, it just all goes back to that system. I know where my business comes from. That's where I start. And then if I feel like I need to add to it, then I think strategically about where to spend my time.
That's great. I love the idea here of just being where the people are that you want to be nurturing. You know, make sure you're getting that face time at those organizations and events and whatnot, and nurture those who are pushing the opportunities in front of you. That's great.
Yes.
So what advice would you offer the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
So I think for someone who's looking to grow their network, I've done this exercise with a number of clients, and I always tell them, okay, so let's first figure out who your ideal client is. Then let's figure out who knows them, which I refer to those as centers of influence or COI. So First, who knows them? Okay, if we know who knows your ideal client, then we decide, well, do you know anybody? Let's just use a basic example. So a financial advisor, right? So if you're a financial advisor and you know who your ideal client is, and you recognize that the people who know your ideal client, maybe they are a part of a certain rotary or a CPA or attorney that's going to have financial conversations with their clients that can send them your way. Well, then the next question is, okay, if we know where the centers of influence, who they are, the type of people that they are, how many do you know that, how many PAs in a know? And if the question is, I don't know any, then we start looking for what I call the warm introduction, the people who do know, the attorneys, and the CPAs, to introduce you so you can start developing your own centers of influence. It usually works like a snowball. You have a couple of people say, hey, you got to meet so-and-so. And then those people say, you got to meet so-and-so, because natural connectors know each other. So usually who they're going to connect you with is somebody else who's naturally going to say, oh, I got to connect you with so-and-so and so-and-so. And so it starts to snowball in and of itself. But it all comes back to you understanding who you're trying to develop as a center of influence and what the ultimate outcome is that first you want to be able to help them, because if you can help them, they're more likely to want to help you. And that hopefully is an introduction, or even better yet, a referral, because those are two different things, but an introduction or a referral to maybe a potential client.
I really like that last statement that you said about helping them first. But I'm curious, so let's talk about what is the difference between the introduction and the referral.
Sure, it's referrals. I get the craziest definition of what a referral is. And so I always tell folks there's a difference between a lead, word of mouth buzz, an introduction, and a referral. And you have to know the difference, because if you receive, you know, a potential new client through a lead or word of mouth buzz or an introduction, you have to be able to recognize that so you can use the right language to shift that into an actual referral. So the quick definitions are a lead, more likely a warm lead, is when somebody says, hey, Lori, I know Tom over at that company really needs what you do, so why don't you give him a call and use my name when you call. That's right. The person, if I didn't say, I'm going to connect you with Tom and I'm going to tell him why he should talk to you, right? That's what makes it a referral. So me just telling you to call Tom, it's just a lead. And I won't call those. I mean, that's just what I learned over my time, calling somebody cold, even if I do have a name to use. It doesn't mean anything, because the person who said use my name didn't make the connection. And it's the connection piece that makes a referral and a need. So word of mouth buzz is the same thing. If I can floor your ears, I bet they were burning last week, right? Because I was just talking to you about all these people who should hire you. Well, that doesn't do you any good, because you don't know who I'm talking about. And more than likely, I can't remember. I just know I talked about you. So you have to be able to kind of shift that conversation, right? To understand, well, who the heck were you talking to, right? To have them make a connection for you. And an introduction is, it usually has the connection piece, right? The connection piece, Lori meets Stacy meets Lori, you two should know each other. Well, that's great. That's like one more person to know in my network, which is not necessarily a bad thing, right? But if you're pressed for time and you're very strategic about where you spend your time, I don't know if spending any time with you, of course I know it is, but I don't know if spending any time with you is actually valuable for me, because I don't know why we're being introduced. I just know we're being introduced. And that's what makes it different from a referral. A referral has the connection. It has Stacy meet Lori, Lori meet Stacy. And then it has the why. Why am I telling you guys to meet? Hey, because Stacy, you really need to hire Lori because you said this was an issue and she can solve it. And that is what a true referral is. It identifies the need and it actually makes the connection happen between the two people, between the prospective new client and the solution provider, right? You in this case and me as the prospective new client. It, the referral source makes that, identifies the need and then makes the connection happen. And word of mouth buzz, a warm lead and an introduction lack one or both of those pieces.
That is a fantastic breakdown. I've never heard it kind of, what's the word I'm looking for here? Just presented that way. I love this. And at the end of the day, the goal is to get a solid referral that has all of the pieces of the puzzle put together. And I think we've all been in the situation where we've generated the lead or the word of mouth or even that soft introduction, but the strength and the integrity and the opportunity really lies in that referral. Thank you so much for breaking that down to us.
Yeah. And you know, and here's the other thing too, as I tell folks, that's why referrals are a strategy to be reckoned with, because when somebody tells somebody else, you need to hire Stacy, all the work's done. All I have to do is meet that person. The trust is already there, right? The end of that know, like, and trust sales continuum is already there. The person who said, you need to hire Stacy, the trust they feel towards me has already been transferred to that new person. All I have to do is meet them and decide, yes, I can help you. No, I can help you. Do you want me to be the person who helps you, right? We have to just get the know and the like out of the way. And that makes referrals easier to close, faster to close. They're less price sensitive because I've already established value because somebody else said, don't worry about figuring out who to hire. I'm telling you who to hire. And I had somebody in my office yesterday. We were having the same conversation. And she's like, you know, Megan, one of my other clients, she's like, Megan's been talking to me about coming and seeing you for a while. She said, up front, you're expensive, but worth every penny. She's like, I'm now at a place where I don't actually care what it costs. I know how you help people is really important, and I need to hire you. The conversation different from a sales conversation I should have had, had she been sitting there saying, well, I don't know. I don't know you. I don't know if I should work with you. And I don't know if you're going to be expensive or not. I mean, it's an entirely different conversation. And it makes my job so much easier to be able to have someone say yes to me and start working with me.
Yeah. Wow. That's just so, it's extraordinary. I love it. Thank you so much again for breaking that down for us. So on the networking side of things, and it's a lot of it, what I'm hearing is that face-to-face traditional networking, but obviously digital is really important nowadays. Which one do you find more value in?
So specific from the face-to-face networking or the online?
Yep. Digital versus traditional.
So, you know, it's interesting. I think when I was building my coaching practice, right? So I always tell folks my business today is a very healthy business, but it sometimes has split personalities. So on the local side, like the folks that are going to be doing like one-on-one coaching with me, the traditional networking really works well for that. Like, but that's limited, right? Truly by space. I mean, I think geography, like limited to where you are. But the other part of my business was specifically with my online referral program, that's, you know, an online product. So it is national and international. And I have found that the networking, whereas it kind of translates, it doesn't exactly translate to the same way. So with the online networking that I do, I mean, I have been on a number of podcasts, and I think the network I do with podcast hosts, like after the shows are over, are great and really build a network. But they also are ideally a center of influence to people that, you know, would need what I do because that's why they have me on their show. So it's different, but it still comes down to that human touch, right? It still comes down to you and I having a conversation on and like staying in touch, right? And then when I'm really talking with somebody who wants to hire learn about me online, it's all going to be done through email, which means how I communicate who I am and my values and a little bit about me, I'm kind of at a disadvantage because you're never going to talk to me face to face. And so it's really making sure I'm really clear in my messaging about how to leave and how I can help somebody. And it happens to be done in a written form. So I think they have their strengths and I think they have their cons. But I think that as long as you know when to apply both, they're both really good. It's just that you use them in different ways.
Yeah, I agree with that. I definitely agree that they both have strengths and they both have their weaknesses. So good discussion there. So I'm going to change up the pace and ask a fun question. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, if you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
So I've actually been asked this question before, and it was in front of, this was in my 30s, but this was, I was on stage, C20-somethings. And I was asked, what's the best piece of advice you could give to somebody at this age? And really my advice was, hurry up and fail. Because you don't want to always take the safe road, right? I mean, think about this, right? If you hurry up and fail at something, you'll recognize how well or how not well you bounce back. And more than likely, what you'll realize is that you do bounce back and you can bounce back. Failure isn't a bad thing. You know, my business failed and I was well into my 30s and I had two small children at home. And I do have a husband, but he also owns his own business. He's self-employed as well. And it was kind of a scary place and time for us to be. And I would have loved to have known going through that, I've done this before, I will be fine. And ideally, I do have that self-confidence to know that about myself, but it was still my first time of truly failing. And I really would know what I can do this, I'll get through it. But I would have loved to have been like, you know what, I failed something before, if I bounce back, I'll be fine. So I would tell the younger version of myself, try things that will push you out of your comfort zone, specifically if you think it's going to make you fail, because the lessons learned from that can inform your future path and will also inform you when you go to make a decision about doing something, knowing you've got the confidence that if this doesn't work, I know how to bounce back. I just think that's an important lesson to have had younger versus older.
Hurry up and fail. That's fantastic. It's priceless. It really is. It's learn from the mistakes early on so that you've got more room for success and the opportunities that are in front of you. I just love that. And pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone, that's so important. And it's just a fear that we all live in, is I'm going to sit in my bubble of this is what I'm comfortable doing. But once you step outside of that comfort zone, man, just the opportunities that start opening up are just so incredible.
You know, you so speak the truth. That's so true, because sometimes the opportunities that are going to be the best ones for us only come because we're willing to do something different. And if we never do anything different, we have no idea what's the loss of opportunity.
So much truth right there. Okay, here's another fun one. So we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Now, who would be the one person you'd love to connect with? And do you think you can do it within the 6th degree?
The one person I would love to connect with. Does it count if I've met them before, but I actually don't really know them? Can I use that?
Sure. Yeah. Let's go that route.
Okay. So, yes. So, you know, when I started creating my referral strategy and my clients started using it and having success and results, I knew that this was something that I could use to help more people. And to do that, I was going to need to build an online business to be able to support people being able to buy my online program of growing their business through referrals and doing that an online way. So I know how to build a coaching practice where I'm on the phone with people across the country office, but an online business where you sell online is totally new to me. And I've been doing this now for a couple of years, so the success is different now, but it's just interesting when I was learning how to do it. The one person I really admire through this process, her name is Amy Porterfield. You may or may not know.
Yeah, I'm familiar with her name. Yep.
But she has built a very successful online. Okay, perfect. Perfect. So she's built a very successful online business, and I attended a conference last year and she was one of the speakers, so I did go up and introduce myself. Because someone had made a comment to me at another conference, you're kind of like Amy Porterfield in that way. And so I told her about it just to like in that regard. So I do think that I could probably reconnect with Amy, because the few people that I met at that conference know her well, and the person putting on the conference I got to know well. And I think it would only be 1 degree of separation to probably get to Amy. That doesn't mean she'll give me any time, but it means I could definitely get the ask and do maybe 1 or 2 degrees of separation.
I bet you could do it. Especially if someone referred to you as her. You're like-minded, right. Obviously. All right. So as an aspiring author, I imagine you read a lot of books. What book are you reading right now?
So that is a great question. Yes, I love to read. My father is an author. And so I think that is where my love of reading comes. He writes fiction books, though, and I only really read nonfiction books. I know that's a big disappointment to him, but I do read all his books. But the books that I love to read are usually business books. So, and I usually have one or two going at the same time. So I'm reading 80-20 Sales and Marketing. And I think that author is, I think it's Terry Marshall. I know the last name is Marshall, but it's Sales and Marketing 80-20. And then the personal book that I'm starting right now is actually, I think it's called Raising Boys by Design, What the Brain and the Bible Says About Raising Boys. And I have two boys. I have three kids, but I have two boys. One, of course, is my biological son, Jacob. But then a couple years ago, my husband and I took custody of his sister's child, our nephew. And so I have an 8-year-old and 9-year-old boy. And so I just decided now that I'm also raising another child that wasn't